It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
He was implicated in the hacking and spying of activists in Mexico. It may have helped the Saudis kill and behead Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Now here's an offer that many governments just cannot refuse. Would you like to hack into the phones of journalists, gather up every bit of data, and trace every call, message, and keystroke? Then you're in luck. There's some malware, malicious software for that. This story starts with an Israeli company called the NSO Group. It says it's in the business of cyber intelligence for global security and stability.
Now, it's inserting itself into the pandemic news as if it needed more bad press. NSO Group, the infamous Israeli spyware company with links to intelligence agencies, developed software tracking coronavirus-infected citizens. But as our motherboard reporter Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai tells us, that's likely just a way for it to expand its questionable business. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. Lorenzo, welcome back. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back, Ben. It's been a while.
It's been like a little while.
300 years.
It seems like 300 years.
Yeah.
I missed you.
Thank you. Yeah, I missed you too. It's great. It's really good to be back.
Did you miss the cyber?
I did miss the cyber. I was, part of my routine when I was off was listening to as many podcasts as I could. And cyber was one of them. And it was kind of like comfort food for my ears and my mind, I have to say, to listen to your voice and listen to you roasting people. It was great.
Wow. Well, I think that's the nicest thing you ever said to me. So I think we're going to now move on to the interview before just going to stay on that high. Okay. So speaking of something we've talked a lot about before in the past, NSO Group just keeps coming up doing nefarious things. And I think to start this off, let's just recap. Who is NSO Group? What is it?
Yeah, so NSO Group, as some of our listeners may know, is a pretty notorious surveillance technology company from Israel, from Tel Aviv. And you may remember them from a slew of cases where governments that are their customers were caught using their product, which is like a spyware, mobile spyware. And they used it against, journalists, human rights activists. There was one case in Mexico where the Mexican government used it against doctors and health activists that advocated for people not to drink soda. It was one of the weirdest cases of abuse. I think it's fair to say that they're the world leaders in terms of selling very intrusive, very effective spyware. And when I say spyware, I mean like, malware that it's designed to, hack your phone and or your computer, although for NSO, I think it's they only have a phone product. So it hacks your phone and then, records your calls, intercepts your text messages, steals data from, your photo camera and stuff like that.
They are, I think we could say, they're kind of like this gun for hire mercenary spyware company that has done some pretty shady business. It also, as we know, was implicated in the assassination dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah, that was definitely their most controversial case. Citizen Lab, which is our listeners probably would know as well, they are an activist group and a human rights group out of Toronto. They have documented most of these abuse cases, and they found that Saudi Arabia most likely was using NSO against some of Khashoggi's friends and close associates. There is no evidence that Saudi Arabia used NSO against Khashoggi himself, but there is documented and, almost certain certainty that they used it against some of his closest associates and friends in the lead up to his assassination. And you have to remember that, like, sometimes you don't need to spy on a person directly if you can spy on his whole network, right? Like, let's say that I want to spy on you. Like, maybe I can't hack your phone, but if I can hack your, your best friend's phone, your family's phones, then it's effectively the same, right? I'm getting, you know, your conversations with them. I'm getting your messages with them. So yeah, in this case, that's what it appears that happened. NSO, we have to say that, you know, has always denied this. They said that they ran a thorough investigation into this and looked into it and found no evidence of their customers targeting Khashoggi himself. But as I said, that's not really good enough, because if you're spying on their friends, then what's the difference?
Well, if this company, this group, which also, as I understand it, has some former members of a very elite Israeli hacking agency, Unity 200, within its ranks, they keep getting bad headlines. And to get any worse, they've also inserted themselves in the global pandemic. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, so obviously Israel is also getting hit by COVID-19. And being a country that is always at the forefront of surveillance and using technology for surveillance, they started thinking about using some of their, you know, some of the tools that they probably already use to track people infected with coronavirus and keep an eye on movements, people's movements, not only to see if they're, you know, respecting the lockdown, but also to do what scientists call contact tracing. Contact tracing is a technique where you follow the trail of an infected person and see who they have met, who they've been around, in a way to, you know, try to figure out who else could be infected, who else is at risk. You know, in an ideal system, you could even, if you do this well, you could even geographically restricted lockdowns. So maybe you figure out that only a certain neighbor in a city has been hit, so you only close down that part of the city. It's something that works very well in theory. I think a lot of people have doubted that contact tracing is very useful in practice, especially once the epidemic becomes a pandemic, right? Because contact tracing only helps if you're really early in the game, right? Imagine if this was January, for example, and you're like, okay, there's only one case in New York. Where has this guy gone? Who has he been around? But once there's, like, you know, thousands of cases, and also especially with this kind of illness where a lot of people don't show symptoms, I feel like it's probably going to be very hard to do this. So yeah, NSO is pitching a product called Fleming to do this kind of contact tracing. We already know that the Israeli government has approved its use, or rather they have accepted NSO's pitch. I think they're still getting the final regulatory approvals. NSO says that they're pitching it to other countries, but we don't know which ones, and we don't know if they, you know, if they got the pitch approved.
That's, I mean, it's kind of terrifying to the degree in which you have some of these, you know, intelligence grade companies who are inserting themselves in this pandemic to sort of capitalize on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what John Scott Railton of Citizen Lab told us when we did a story on this. He said that, in his opinion, this is just NSO and other companies trying to profit off of a tragic crisis. And you know, to, like, the problem with this system, other than what we just talked about, you know, whether it's effective or not, is that in practice, this is mass surveillance, right? Because the only way you can do this, if you really believe it works, and, you know, let's assume that it works, the only way you can do this is to effectively spy on everyone for a long amount of time, you know, at least 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and actually probably as long as the crisis continues, because, you know, until there's a vaccine or anything like that, the virus will keep going around. So if you really believe in the system and you want to use it, then you're effectively spying on everyone for a very long time. And the other issue is, like, what's going to happen to this system once the crisis is over? Do we believe that governments will just, you know, turn it off? You know, they will just shut down the system and throw it away? Or they'll be like, oh, you know, this is pretty useful. Maybe we should keep it around. And you know, I don't want to sound like a crazy, you know, tinfoil hat wearing activist, but it's, you know, unfortunately, there's very recent and very good examples where surveillance technology was promoted and enabled for a certain reason, and then was just kept around because it was just too good to give up.
It's actually just like, yeah, I can't. The last thing I'd want to do is look at this crisis and see how to make money off of it. Let alone if I were some sort of, you know, surveillance company. But I guess that's where they got, how they got to their position in the first place.
Yeah, and I mean, in their defense, or I mean, to put ourselves in their shoes, right? They already have these products. Like, it's not like they're. I don't think they sat down at a table and thought, okay, guys, how do we make money off of people dying and people getting sick? You know, it was more like, oh, this is, we already have this system, because the NSO product is part of their Pegasus spyware suit. So they just essentially repurposed something that they already had, which I imagine was not really that much of a, you know, effort in terms of programming and stuff like that. So, you know, I think we can maybe give them the benefit of the doubt in this case. You know, it's, after all, it's their job to develop these systems. I think in this case, it's more like our government's going to take advantage of it and just, you know, turn on mass surveillance and never turn it off. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a race now going on. In our story last week, we spoke about another company that's similar to NSO. It's called CypherGate. They're based in Rome. And I think their CEO is a former military person, and they have ties with like the Secret Service or the intelligence community in Italy. And yeah, they're pitching basically the same product as NSO. So, you know, it's not just NSO. A lot of companies around the world, companies that usually are, you know, government contractors and companies that sell to police or intelligence agencies, are trying to take advantage of the crisis.
Well, Lorenzo, thanks very much for your, I think this might be your 2020 debut, actually, on cyber.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you'll...
Yeah, hopefully it's not the last.
It won't be the last. There will be more. And we will one day see each other face to face and discuss how much better Juventus is than Barcelona.
I don't know. If maybe that, at that point, Cristiano Ronaldo will be gone and, you know, who knows?
Oh, God.
We'll see.
Yeah, all right. Bye.
Bye.
Looking for inspiring stories? Listen to the EY Leading Into Tomorrow podcast. It features compelling stories from leaders across government and the public sector who've transformed their organizations and services. From the impact of grants to how digital innovation is reshaping affordable childcare, you'll get actionable insights and ideas that can be used around the world. Download Leading Into Tomorrow by EY wherever you get your podcasts.
Why, hello, Jason.
Hey, fitness check?
Still doing it, man. I was just saying to you, I did a 5 mile run today. Ran by your place, I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, I biked 45 miles over the weekend in 2 days, which is nice. Been doing some pull-ups as well. Got a pull-up bar.
There you go. There you go. Keeping it real.
It's time to get jacked. I feel like I was really, really like lackadaisical the first couple weeks, but like, it's time to get jacked. I agree with you.
It's all we can do. It's all we can do while we still have our health and our happiness.
Exactly. Okay. Well, we should start a fitness pod, I think, but you know, we'll talk about cyber for now.
Yeah, let's do that first. Okay. So this one is, you know, it's coming out of a state that I've been seeing a lot of recently because I'm rewatching The Sopranos in this time of quarantine. New Jersey's broken unemployment system and its use of a 60-year-old programming language like there hasn't been any that have come up since.
Yes. So this is a new one. This is definitely a new one. So all these governors are doing their, you know, daily coronavirus press conferences in which they're throwing up PowerPoints and talking about the struggles that their states are facing. And over the weekend, Phil Murray, who's the governor of New Jersey, said that its unemployment filing system has been completely overwhelmed by people who have lost their jobs because of the coronavirus pandemic. So we don't need to get too into it, but you know, there's something like 10 million Americans who have lost their jobs over the last 2.5 weeks, who have filed for unemployment. And a lot of these systems are, you know, they're government websites, and government websites suck. So, like, that's a stereotype, but for the most part, government websites suck. And while federal government websites are terrible, state government websites are usually even worse. And so New Jersey's unemployment system is running on servers / backend that was programmed in COBOL, which was a programming language that was one of the first programming languages that came after binary. So this is, it's not the best.
I mean, it sounds super secure too.
I mean, honestly, like a lot of these early programming languages are pretty secure because there's so few people who know them at this point. So it's like, I mean, security through obscurity is certainly not a thing, but it's like, you don't have that many people running around like probing for bugs on COBOL systems, I would imagine. It's like, you know, why bother?
That's a very good point. Yep.
And the other thing is, like, a lot of these programming languages are pretty fast because they don't have like sophisticated ways of sitting on top of systems. Like, you're getting very close to machine, like ones and zeros, like machine language at that point, because these languages are like so rudimentary. So, I mean, there are still people who program in COBOL. You know, a survey earlier this year found that people would rather modernize COBOL than get rid of it altogether. Huh. But it hasn't been modernized really. So it's like there's really no reason for these servers to be using this programming language at this point. And right now, I mean, the reason he was talking about this, he's like, our system's been overwhelmed and we don't have anyone who knows the programming language to troubleshoot it. So it's like really, really bad. It's not a good thing. But I mean, time and time again, we've found that a lot of legacy systems run on really old programming languages. We did like a really great story last year that the New York City subway's operating system was designed in like the early 90s, and it's like super rudimentary, but it's still being used.
I mean, this is going way back, but I remember we did a story once on nuclear warheads and the systems that guide them being run on floppy disks.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. It's like we're still using floppies for our nukes. So it's like,
that's insane.
I mean, it's on one hand, it's really terrifying. On the other hand, it's like, I guess if it isn't broke, don't fix it. But like in this case, it is broke. So like, time to fix it, you know?
Yes. And but also it's another example of just how, you know, federal systems and, you know, different public service systems use really bad code, or, you know, things like, I see this sort of as akin to, you know, how certain hospitals didn't update their Microsoft Explorer or their Microsoft Outlook accounts and are more susceptible to hacks.
A lot of them are running on like XP and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just sort of like these clunky things, and then they get exposed in a crisis.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. There's also like, you know, Obamacare website went down immediately after the exchanges were opened, and that was like a huge problem. So it's like the rollout of government websites is usually not very good. And I don't know, it's like I had to go find some number that I had like with the IRS, and like navigating the IRS's website was just like, I don't know, it felt like I was in elementary school, like going through some just like super rudimentary website that you have no idea if it worked or not. And like, you eventually get something in the like actual physical mail. So it's like, we need to do better. It's not good.
We need to do much better.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they can figure out Stuxnet, but they can't figure out a way for people to get their unemployment insurance or their unemployment checks very easily.
Yeah. So that's our fun. That's our serious but fun story. The other two are just straight fun. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, when you see a story where the headline is essentially about something that scans your butthole in order to help it be sprayed with water better, I click on that link, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, hold on. My dog is barking.
It happens. It's one of those conference calls where the dog interrupts.
Yeah.
So it's becoming a common tweet these days.
Yeah, it's really, it's charming. So Stanford University has introduced to the lexicon the term anal print scan. They have created a smart toilet that will analyze your poop and pee and identify you by the, I don't know what you would call this, but by your butthole.
Your balloon knot? I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah. They call it the, quote, distinctive features of the user's anoderm. And the anoderm is basically a skin flap inside your anal canal. So, anyways, that's lovely. And
I mean, I love the lead on this is fantastic. I'm going to read it. This is from Sam Cole, Shakespeare. Please. The Shakespeare of Motherboard, by the way. Your butthole is like a snowflake. No two are exactly alike. At least that's the crux of a new scientific paper. Blah, 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 blah. So good. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic. So, I mean, we're trying to learn more about this. Like, this paper was published in Nature, which is, I would say, between that science and proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, like the top three scientific journals in the country. So it's like, this is serious research, and it's like, of course, concerning because, I don't know, you have the surveillance implications of such technology. However, as a scientific paper, it's like really incredible. It's amazing.
Also, all the buttholes that they show.
Yeah, there's definitely way more buttholes in this paper than one would expect to find in a scientific paper, just like your average run-of-the-mill journal. So yeah, here are the specs. It has four cameras that have the technology to do anal print recognition, as they call it. They say that it has two-factor authentication, meaning your fingerprint and your anal print. I don't think they're really using two-factor authentication correct there, but I guess it sort of is. And then they also had, I think they had 11 volunteers who volunteered to poop in this toilet, and they also had two, quote, board certified doctors, scientists, I'm not sure, look at like thousands and thousands of frames of video to help train the algorithm that is able to do this identification. So, you know, serious science here, very important.
I mean, it is like they, you know, they say that you're tracking, you know, your pee and your stool, I'll use another word for it.
Yeah.
Is an excellent way to keep track of your health and what you need to do to for the benefits of yourself. So, I mean, it's just too bad that even, I mean, admittedly, I just find this hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I read an article today that people are talking about like using stool samples to detect coronavirus and stuff like this. So there's like all sorts of things you can learn from your poop. I think there's,
or like you shouldn't, nobody should be eating butt these days. Especially if you're in New York City, because you can catch corona from rimming. New York Public Health put that out.
Yeah. That was another amazing thing that they put out there.
A lot of good butthole stories these days, I think.
Yeah.
Is what we're saying.
Yeah. All right. That's enough. I'm starting to feel ill.
Okay. All right. Well, I think you're staring at these pictures too much.
Yeah.
Okay. This is
palate cleanser.
It's making a glorious return. Just cue the music.
God,
that's right.
We're talking about UFOs. It's been a little too long.
Yeah. It's because this fucking plague is taking over my life.
Dude, I have a backlog of like five UFO scoops that we haven't run just because it's like the plague. But they're all coming. And the first one, I just wanted to do a fun thing since we're all in quarantine. MJ Benias, our UFO reporter extraordinaire, who was on a previous episode of Cyber, wrote a piece about how to get into UFOs.
I mean, I don't need anybody telling me how, but I'm glad that he's putting this out there.
Yeah, I mean, so the way that you get into UFOs is you become interested in UFOs and you learn all about them. And the best way to do that is to follow Motherboard's UFO column, which MJ writes. But there are a lot of other ways and things that you can do. So that includes listening to UFO podcasts. And he recommends a podcast called Unknown. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something called Somewhere in the Skies, Radio Misterioso, The Micah Hanks Program, The Last Podcast on the Left, Where Did the Road Go, Hysteria 51, and UFOmet. Ben, have you listened to any of these podcasts?
The Last Podcast on the Left.
That's like a leftist podcast though, right? Or is that is it a UFO one?
No, it's a leftist podcast.
Yeah. But I guess they hate UFOs from time to time, huh?
Yeah. But it also talks about a bunch of weird stuff. So it's really good. It does a bunch of weird stuff on like weird conspiracies, and it's awesome. It's a great show.
Yeah, and then he also recommends some documentaries you should check out. There's also articles for some of these. He's reviewed some of them for Motherboard. On the Trail of, it's on Amazon Prime. Hellier, which
yes, should be,
have, do you know Hellier?
I have corresponded with Hellier before.
Really?
I have, yeah.
So I watched some trailers for Hellier, and I've got to say it looks great. However, it doesn't super seem like a documentary to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Oh no, I was thinking of Hellier, the Canadian former Canadian National Defense Minister who said that like there's a conspiracy to.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that guy?
Yeah, I do remember that guy. There's some like pretty prominent Canadian UFO people, but no, Hellier is an internet web series.
No, that, I haven't. I haven't seen it. No, I'm just seeing this now. No, I have not seen it. I will check it out.
Yeah. And it looks awesome. But as MJ says, it looks into cults, ancient witchcraft, interdimensional beings, and goblins and aliens. So I think it's like, you know, part documentary, part maybe like tall tales or myth telling.
I'm into it.
I haven't seen it. It looks sick though. And then Witness of Another World, as well as the short documentary, The Nimitz Encounters. And he also suggests some internet rabbit holes to go down, which I think you should read the article to find those out. But a big one is The Black Vault, which is like tons and tons of FOIA documents, unclassified documents, things that you can read and, you know, teach yourself, radicalize yourself, get yourself into UFOs. We have a lot of time these days, so, you know.
We have a lot of time these days, and if you're going to spend any of it doing anything nonsensical, do something sensible and become a believer.
Definitely become a believer. I would say be careful when you go into conspiracy world. There's a lot of like really interesting things you can find, but I would also say know when to pull yourself out. I think that UFO conspiracy is like a pretty, for the most part, it's like a pretty banal one and like a pretty good one to start with, but don't go too deep.
Yeah. I think when you start believing that the government is keeping it from you.
Yeah.
I think maybe because that one's, it's the definite sign where this is dumb, because there's no way a secret like that would be held by the US government. The leakiest ship of all the ships in the land.
Yeah, I mean, I've read like four stories today about leaks within the government, within the military, within, presidency. Like, you know, it happens
It happens all day, every day. Well, yeah. Jason, stay safe.
You too.
And we'll do this again next week.
I feel like I talk to you often, but I haven't seen you in going on 5 weeks now. It's outrageous.
I have not realized how long it was until I actually did the math the other day, because my brother asked me and I was like, holy shit, I've been alone for a while.
Yeah. Okay, stay strong.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll see you guys later.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
This week's episode was produced by me, recorded by me, and edited by Ricardo Contreras. You'll be hearing from us next week, and stay safe, everyone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.